Welcome to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.
Q is about conversation.
If we're really concerned about ending poverty, we've got to be more concerned about creating justice.
Our cultural products as Christians need to both defy and resonate with the culture.
And God's doing amazing things. His church is expanding. His church is growing.
It's not what's the purpose of my life. It's what is the purpose that's been assigned.
Stay curious. Think well. Advance good. This is Q.
Welcome to Q Ideas. I'm Gabe Lyons, and I'm so glad you are spending the next half hour with us because we're exploring big ideas, and that's what we do with Q. We ask big questions, and we believe Christians ought to be some of the most thoughtful people in the world. In fact, our tagline at QIdeas.org says to stay curious, think well, and advance good. And we believe if more Christians were doing that today, we could have more thoughtful dialogue. We could be showing up in so many of the cultural conversations that many Christians really don't feel equipped to show up in. One of the things in my work is that I sense there's a lack of confidence, not only in older Christians, but also younger Christians. Some of the research we released in our latest book, Good Faith, describes just that 47% of millennials are afraid to speak up about their faith. That's the environment that we live in today. As Americans, many people just aren't sure how to talk about things, and so in a lot of cases, they just don't talk about it. Well, in today's episode, we're preparing for 2 days from now, Martin Luther King Jr.'s holiday. And it's a holiday that's devoted specifically to remembering what took place in the civil rights movement and to a man who led that from a biblical perspective, who led a justice movement that literally reshaped the landscape of American life and started to ask much bigger questions about what it meant to be made in the image of God and what it meant to treat one another humanely. Well, sadly, as you know, over the last few years, we've started to see in American public life that the race conversation isn't settled, that there's a lot completely unsettled and many things that haven't even been addressed yet that people are feeling. And so it was just bubbling underneath the surface. But then when Ferguson took place, when we started to see other things erupt, it started to expose the wounds that go way deeper than surface level. And it forced us to ask bigger questions about, as a society, in 2017, how is it that we're going to live? How are we going to do better? How are we going to build on the legacy of Martin Luther King Jr.? Are things really better? Or have we just glossed over some deep pain and some deep hurts? Well, today on this show, we're going to get to hear from two people who've thought deeply about this. We're going to listen to Michelle Higgins, who holds an MDiv from Covenant Theological Seminary in St. Louis, but she's been working on the front lines of this justice movement. She's the director and founding member of Faith for Justice, a Christian advocacy group that's dedicated to continuing the biblical story of activism. She's participated in civil disobedience and leadership development. She's a local organizer. She's somebody who, when things are going down, she's bringing people out to the street and to pray and to listen and to learn and to actually organize to say, we have a voice and you need to hear this voice. And in particular, she's prophetic. She doesn't mind speaking truth to power or to people who have existing views that might be uncomfortable, in fact, hearing what she has to say. Well, this afternoon, you're going to get to hear some of that. And so the way we do this show is we bring to you some of our best talks that have taken place at our Q conferences. We do these conferences annually every year in April. They take place in Nashville, where we bring together the leading voices who are thinking well about topics that we believe are important for Christians to be educated on and to actually act on. And so you're going to get to hear a conversation between two leaders, Michelle, who's interviewed by Greg Thompson. Now, Greg Thompson is somebody who's studied Martin Luther King Jr.'s life. He not only has been a pastor himself, but he now directs New City Commons, which is an education and consulting team that seeks to support the church in its work to reimagine the common good and to reinvigorate the way we think about our role in the public square. And so let's listen in to what ideas we can glean from their Q conversation.
So one of the things that Michelle and I have talked about a lot, it's, some of you will be familiar with the Boys' line about the color line being the line that runs through our own social history and continues to do that. And one of the things that a lot of us may not understand is that color line about race functions as a cataract, that it had a quality of opacity to it. And one of the functions of that was that so much of white America could not see what was happening on the other side of the color line. Because remember, the logic of segregation was not so much to hate black people as to not see them, right? Make them disappear. And so what I want to talk about with Michelle, what we want to talk about is what it means to see, how we can learn to see again through and overcome this opacity of the color line. So Michelle, I want us to learn to see together. The first thing I want to talk about is, how do we see ourselves? How do we in the American church, how do we see ourselves? What do we need to see in our story? What do you see that we need to see? And let's talk about that for a minute.
What I love is the dedication that a man named Brian Stevenson, the director of the Equal Justice Initiative, that's right, in Montgomery, Alabama, he says the key is truth-telling. Racial reconciliation is a lot of nice talk about holding hands and hugging, but if we could begin to tell the truth about the land we live on, about the people who live on that land, and about the manner in which we commune together as family and as friends, then we might know our blind spots. So what's the major blind spot for this country? We made Native peoples invisible. In my city, there were the people of the Mound, people who had ceremonial burial areas, Native tribes that were removed and their mounds shredded so that we could put beautiful bridges to baseball athletes and parks dedicated to Olympic figures. We covered the actual history of a land that we stole. And so truth-telling, I think, is step one. And also truth-telling will help us in the way that we worship, right? What's the truth about most, not just evangelical worship, but worship in the U.S.? It's white-centered. Who uses CCLI in here? Tell the truth, right? It's very white-centered. There's no understanding, there's no challenge to actually broaden and say, I might accidentally be teaching my congregation that Eurocentric worship is the only way to praise a God who sent his son not to Europe.
Yeah, I don't recall him being in Europe.
Right.
Yeah, that I don't recall.
So
that.
It was a huge blind spot there, right? Yeah, generally, what we don't want to face is that white supremacy is the air that we breathe. And to be liberated from it will feel like choking, despite the fact that the truth is to be liberated from white supremacist structure would actually be to breathe oxygen instead of poison.
Yeah, okay, so I want to follow up on this because, thank you, please clap, that's good. So let's talk about white supremacy because people hear that and they probably think, yeah, those Klan people.
Mm. Right, exactly right.
We do not like them. But that's not what we mean when we talk about white
exactly.
supremacy. Because so say more about what white supremacy is and how we talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's the actual who built, who founded institutions, and how are they situated, how are they made to prosper, upon whose backs was all the pressure made to erect a system, or actually literally erect a building, and then into whose pockets does all the profit go from whatever happens in that system? So, and I think it's even more insidious than that. We talk about privilege. We talk about advantage. You're born with a silver spoon in your mouth, whether or not your daddy could pay all the bills, right? We talk a lot about the fact that in my city, 92% of the people who get ticketed for jaywalking are black. And generally, white people don't get ticketed for jaywalking. You can literally walk across the street whenever and wherever you mighty well please. And if you are black, chances are you'll get a ticket. What happens when we see that in the church? The silence that comes with refusing to talk about social issues. When we decide I will be silent about social issues, but I will amplify issues of addiction or my own sin. I want to lament and curse at myself because I'm such an evil person, but I don't want to lament and denounce evil structures, then I'm actually teaching people to worship only the purity that they can gain for themselves and not the true justice that would reconcile man to man, human to human, rather, and human to God. So white supremacy is not just people in hoods. White supremacy is people who are so comfortable that they don't want to speak up. People who are so afraid of losing some amount of privilege that liberation will feel like oppression. That's not my quote. Who said that? Like five people have said that, right? You're so afraid that liberation is going to cost you some privilege. And what that means is you're going to have to give up singing and speaking in English every Sunday all the time. You're going to have to give up only doing one type of doxology. You have to give that up because you don't own Jesus and you don't own the manner of worship that goes to him. And you're going to have to give up only doing righteous works inside your sanctuary, only caring for the people who are quote unquote blood relatives. You're going to have to give up believing that when you go to church, you should expect to be coddled instead of expecting to be transformed via a discomfort, a nonviolent transformative tension. Now, that's Dr. King, and if he wasn't right,
he was.
What am I doing here?
Yeah, he was. You know, so I think it's important when we're talking about this. One of the things that you're saying that we need to see about ourselves and our own story is that it is inexorably in the American church has been a white supremacist story. And that's not just a volitional, but an institutional reality. And that white supremacy is not just about the hatred of black people. It is about inhabiting and benefiting from a social order that is consistently privileged, white, especially white
male.
Men. White male. Did we say male? Yeah, we said male. So
come
white
on.
Males throughout its history, and until we can acknowledge that, then we are participating in what is essentially a fiction.
Well, I hope you're appreciating the perspectives in this conversation as we're getting a great history lesson on how we've gotten to the place that we're at. Well, in a moment, we're going to turn our attention to what does this mean for us? What does it mean in our communities? What does it mean with our neighbors? Listening to Q Ideas, I'm Gabe Lyons, and part of what we're trying to explore are some of those difficult conversations and topics that every Christian needs to be engaged in and equipped to discuss. And so as we listen in on this next segment, pay close attention to what could this mean for you? What does it mean for your relationships? What is this going to mean in your community?
One of the effects of this cataract is it also blinds us to our neighbors and to a lot of the things that they are doing and that they are working in. This has been, again, the function of white supremacy is to keep white Americans inside a particular little sphere where we don't know what's going on. And so a lot of what you've been doing with the Black Lives Matter movement, I think, is really important here because you've been working with people for justice, people that don't always ground justice in the same way that you do or pursue it in the same way that you do. And that means that you're working with your neighbors. And so I'd love for you to help us. Okay, where are we blind to what our neighbors are doing, to who they are, to what they're laboring for? Help us see that.
Our biggest blind spot is that we require multiple pieces of information before we will dignify someone. And so if you truly believe that the God of the Bible created humanity, then all you need to know about someone is that they are human and therefore worthy of dignity. However, what we do in the church is we say, tell us your background, tell us your hopes and dreams, tell us how many degrees or how much trouble you've been in life so I can either dignify you or pity you. And then that decides how worthy our friendship will be. Working with your neighbors requires very little. Only that you recognize the value of human life is shored up simply by being a human who is alive. There's not much else you need to know. And so when I work with my neighbors, I understand that our tactics will be different. I understand that my desire to reconcile and dialogue with the police may not be matched by those who have actually been heavily brutalized by police forces that are utterly corrupt. And I'm not judging those people for wanting to dismantle police forces, and they're not judging me for wanting to try to make things better. Our tactics are different. And we are so afraid in church, we're so afraid of not being in control, that we can't imagine that we might not be the only people with a good idea. We are so afraid of being behind that we stop and we have a meeting about whether or not the trans queer humanist should share about what community safety is in our church, that it's been 5.5 hours. They already found another venue. Baby, your church is worthless to the community because you sat around and had to have a meeting about whether or not your neighbors were worthy of being in your space. You don't own that church. The church is the Lord. I'm sorry, I got to go off on you just a little bit. Is that all right? Shame on us for planting in communities and saying we want to be world changers, but we only want to change the people who already agree, look like, marry like, sleep like, spit like, and smell like us. Shame on us for planting in stages and planting for ages where unless you got a tattoo and your jeans are real tight, you don't belong here. What's wrong with us?
Oh, I love you.
You don't own.
I love you.
Come on. You don't own you. And that's the problem of white supremacy, isn't it? Because you think you have to be in control. Isn't that the biggest problem? You think you have to control the outcomes. Poor white men. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry.
I'm a victim.
The white cis head.
I am a victim.
Oh, Lord, y'all feel so bad. Your mom and daddy told you, you better be in charge of everything all the time. And that's the devil, baby. Because mm-hmm. God says, I'm in charge. And you are not, and you'll work with everybody.
Do you know how fun it is sitting right here, right now? I feel so bad for all y'all, because I'm here and y'all are out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think I don't know what to say right now, but moving on and regaining control.
Oh, wait a minute.
I need to have a quick committee meeting to figure out what
truth
I can say.
Selling,
next.
Truth-telling. You know, bring it, Pastor. Come on, Greg.
Right. Well, look, I think one of the things that you've said to us is that we need to see our neighbors and to be open to them. I'd love to hear you talk about some specific things that you have seen, some things that you've learned that we can learn as you've labored with them, because you said we're not the only ones that have a good idea. Tell us some of the beautiful things that you've seen, because we know that participating with the neighbor, seeing them, is a form of repentance, and repentance is drawn by beauty. And so help us see what you've seen.
Yeah, so there are a few things that I always like to talk about. And one is rejection and suffering and understanding that we have all accidentally been conditioned to refuse to bear the reproach. However, we're separating ourselves from the opportunity to live and actually walk like Jesus did, right? To go outside the city gates and to meet him and to bear the reproach that he did, because we know we have resurrection life through him. And so because the church has abandoned many of our communities, when we try to enter into justice work with our neighbors, they won't want to partner with us right away. And you might get spit on. And chances are the church, your family, your broad family through history, through time, deserves to get spat on. So you take that. And then you understand via the suffering of being rejected as the greatest person in the room, begin to understand that solidarity is only achieved through a humility that can only be embodied in someone who knows his or her own need, who knows their own need. What am I doing crying out Black Lives Matter and I believe that we will win if I'm walking presuming that I'm better than everybody who doesn't agree with me? Humility is the only way to achieve a solidarity that brings about reconciliation. So very specifically, what we see is after we started Faith for Justice, it was more of a bridge organization through which Christians who had sympathy but wanted to turn that sympathy into action, they didn't quite know what to do because they were convinced that there were boxes people had to check off in order for them to be worthy to participate with Christians. We thought maybe, I don't know, some of the atheists was going to rub off or something. I didn't know the Holy Spirit was so
contagious.
Weak.
Yeah, it's contagious.
That you could catch atheism and he would leave you. I didn't know that. So we start talking about how you ain't gonna catch atheism like the flu. Go and work with that person. All y'all want to do is not get executed by a cop, okay? And we began to see something quite strange. We began to see fellow humans, and we began to understand what it looks like to pursue justice above pursuing being right about everything. Because now we're reformed, so you know we already think we're right about everything. So it's a really good lesson for the Presbyterian Church in America specifically Honestly, amen, it was a really good lesson for us to discover you might not have a handle on who God is, because God might just own everybody, even those who claim they do not know him or they despise him. So Faith for Justice actually began to lead Christians to go and sit at the feet of non-Christians. Seems ridiculous and backwards, but that was our first step, is embracing the thought that we might engage by being quiet.
I think we've been going there and talking about it, but seeing our mission together, we talk about what we need to see in ourselves, what we need to see in our neighbors, their glory, their wisdom. Let's see our mission. What have you seen? What do we need to see in terms of what the work ahead? Yeah, help us, because I think a lot of times we can be blind to what the mission is and what the labor is. So what do you see?
First of all, civic engagement. The church has been silent for too long. People who say we don't talk politics, we're afraid to talk politics. I'm not telling you to tell your congregation who to vote for. I'm telling you that when you see evil, you have a prophetic responsibility to call evil, evil, and to say there are destructive powers masquerading as ministers of faith, masquerading as witnesses of the gospel, and we have to tear that mess down. Some of those destructive powers occur in the way that we worship and fellowship together, don't they? They occur in the way that we choose to reach out to people. I will feed you if you sit in on this chapel service. Think about that. When was the last time Jesus fed everybody after the Beatitudes? Didn't he heal them first in Matthew 4? Didn't he heal them and then he taught them? Didn't he do that? Didn't the afflicted come weary and worn and had their physical needs met? We're crazy to think social justice and social gospel are at odds with the gospel. Don't feed me that, because God fed me bread and then he saved my soul. So if Jesus did it wrong, then let me know. But that's one of the biggest places. That's one of the biggest places where we're failing. We refuse to engage on the political scene because we don't want to make people uncomfortable. And we refuse to get uncomfortable in our house because I built my house to make me feel better about being complacent. Tear down the idol that says you must be in control and you must own righteousness. Tear down the idol that's actually separating you from God, because God is not white. God is not male. God owns everything. And above all, he wants to teach you what the real truth actually is.
Let's thank Michelle Higgins. All right.
Well, I hope you were challenged by something that you just heard, that it challenged you and made you maybe a little bit uncomfortable, or made you go, man, I need to learn more. I want to dig in to this conversation. That's the point of this. It's to engage us, to help us to be curious, to not think we've figured it all out or we've learned it all, or maybe that we've heard every perspective. Certainly we haven't. And this conversation's too important for Christians to sweep under the rug, especially those of us who've grown up in communities that might have largely been represented by those who have white skin or who haven't shared the experience that many of our African American and black brothers and sisters have. And so I hope this inspires you to engage more. In fact, in my own journey, it took a relationship with a friend named David, an African American friend, who said, I want to explore this with you. And through tough conversations, allowing me to ask some questions that I didn't feel comfortable asking, but he invited them and said, it's okay, man, you can say something, and even if I think it was a racist question, I'm not going to think you're racist. And it gave me the freedom to explore and to learn, and that ultimately ended up in creating a conversation one day where we brought together 10 African American leaders and 10 white leaders who were all Christians, and we said, let's sit in a room for a day and let's try to understand what is happening in this conversation right now. How can we learn from one another? Well, that day there was a lot of listening in it, and it ultimately became a podcast that you could actually listen to over on iTunes. If you look up the Q podcast and look at episode 1, it's called The Race Conversation, and it's about 45 minutes where I really walk people through the journey of learning that I went on that day. And you get to hear from so many other voices who've lived through this, all the way from those who were part of civil rights marches and worked closely with Dr. King, to those who today are experiencing the same kinds of racism with their children and their friends, and they're experiencing it in a way that I think brings it home to where this doesn't feel like something that's an old topic of discussion, but says, no, this is relevant for today, for tomorrow, and for the future. So as we head into Monday, maybe this is the weekend to take a little bit of extra time, reflect on this, because when else are we going to think about it? We must think about it. It's important, not only for the future of our communities, but to bring people together. We in the church are the peacemakers. We're the ones who can seek common good. We're the ones who have a calling to see the image of God in those who are different than us, and to call that out, and to call out the best in one another. So take some time to think about that. And in addition, I want to invite you to consider joining us. I want to meet you as you're listening to this show. Part of our goal is that this will just continue to draw you in to a way of thinking about the Christian's role in society. And so annually, we do an event called Q 2017. It'll take place April 26th to 28th in Nashville, Tennessee. And we want to invite you to join us. It's at the Music City Center downtown. Nashville's an incredible town, a fun city, a great place to come. And at that conference, we invite over 30 different experts and thought leaders and people who are telling their stories of how they're engaging culture. It brings together leaders who not only are leaders in the church, but those who are leaders in business and industry, those who work in government. Maybe you're a teacher working in local education. Maybe you're the mayor of your town and you want to know how, as a person of faith, you can apply your theology and the way that you think to the culture that we're living in. We deal with topics that are difficult in many settings to talk about, some that would even say are off limits. We talk about those topics at Q. This year we'll be engaging so many of those. We talk about everything from international issues such as the refugee problem that's happening in the Middle East and how we can be a part of the solution, to issues such as sexuality, race, calling, and what does it mean for us to do our best to engage a world that's broken by sin, but that we know through Christ's love can be redeemed. How do we play a role in that? How do our churches play a role in that? So you can learn more about all of this at qideas.org/radio or qideas.org/2017 for 2017. Well, it's been great being with you this afternoon. I hope you'll enjoy taking a moment and learning and listening to the other in your life this weekend. And we look forward to being with you next week for our next show.
Thank you for listening to the Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thank you for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.